The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 7th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo and Salon.com will be joining us. Also, in a slight format break, our second guest of the day will be attorney Steve Donziger. He has been under house arrest for over 300 days and is about to be prosecuted by a private law firm for withholding evidence, supposedly, about a scheme that led to Chevron's massive loss in a trial in Ecuador. If that sounds bizarre to you, it should. Meanwhile, amidst the Republican House leadership self-decapitation, a scramble for power, and a realignment to fealty for Trump, new study shows that more than 900,000 people died of COVID in the United States. Meanwhile, April's jobs numbers disappoint. EU is ready to discuss patent waivers, but apparently Merkel rejects the idea. At least 25 are killed in a police raid in one of Rio's largest favelas. Four years after Arkansas executed Leta Lee, a different man's DNA is found on the murder weapon. Joe Biden scraps the Trump plan to force immigrants to submit to bio-identifiers. And new polls show that Biden's $1.8 trillion American Family Plan has 60% support. Philly Police Union appears to be getting members to register as Democrats to target reformer DA Larry Krasner. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for joining us on this this last day of the week. Here with me, of course, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
You didn't even ask me yet.
That's right. I'm not going to.
The changeup. Got her swinging.
Got her. I got her swinging on
that. Me, yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday you complained that every day I ask you how you're doing. Today I'm just like, I'm going to assume well.
It wasn't a complaint, more just, you know, like some sort of remark, passive aggressive remark, probably, right?
I guess.
But
I don't know.
You threw the changeup on me. You're like, you're acting like Matt's cousin, Jay Flaw.
There you go.
Star closer for the Orioles.
There you go. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. The Norfolk Tides, but yep.
Oh, okay.
So it is Casual Friday. As you can see, I'm wearing my soft-colored collared shirt for the day. I got to get a new one. I realize that's happening. I don't know. I'm going to have to...
What color do you think you'll go with?
Blue. I just got to get a different blue one.
That's Why not all. A white polo?
No, I don't. That's not happening.
You should start dressing like the '80s, like some very strange. Because I feel like our clicks would go up a lot if you became the '80s guy.
I mean, I Part of my, I would say a significant number of my clothes are actually from the 80s. I haven't evolved.
Are you trying to say you should pop his collar, Matt?
Yeah, like big, you know, like big lapels and stuff like that. I think that would really kick up another notch.
All right. Well, it's something I will contemplate. We got a lot of stuff to get to here. Thank you for joining us. And it is fascinating to watch the evolution of the debate about whether we should waive patents on the vaccines and their technology in which to develop. And we have gone from the initial things like it's not necessary to, well, it won't get relief quick enough, as if like you can't do two things simultaneously, like give vaccines and start to build the capacity to create vaccines 6 months down the road, 3 months down the road, 9 months down the road, whatever you choose. We also heard like it's impossible for these countries to develop a process of making sure that the vaccines are of a good quality.
As the Baltimore plant contaminated 15 million doses and also essentially slowed production in other countries who are using, you know, AstraZeneca is very similar to the J&J one. It's and they are having to do additional quality control because of the pristine United States facilities.
Right. I mean, the idea being that you can't have problems in the United States and you can't have success in other countries is just absurd. It's bizarre. It's completely unrelated to the question of IP. Like, you just simply create a mechanism to make that happen. And then, of course, the double-edged sword of, you know, Pfizer telling its shareholders, hey, we're going to be doing booster shots probably. And then, well, all of a sudden, if you got a facility that's going to take 9 months to get online, well, that's going to fit in quite nicely with the need for booster shots.
And a reminder that they got to this point after millions of dollars in investment from the German government, and the other vaccines were invested in by the United States government.
Billions.
And now they've made billions and billions, like I think $23 billion, but that's not enough for the shareholders with not really much of their own investment at all.
Well, we haven't gotten to that argument yet, right? I mean, because all of the arguments that we've heard them deploy have been about it's impractical, it's not going to help, it's unnecessary. None of it has been about what it's really been about, which Emma has just alluded to, which is we don't want to cut into our profits. Yeah. And remember, all of these vaccines in one form or another have received billions of dollars, whether it's in the Pfizer BioNTech, where 500 million came from the German government, but there was $1.5 billion promised up front, a pre-order from the U.S. government, whether the vaccine worked or not. I mean, that's a pretty nice, sort of insurance policy there to go ahead and develop these. And the development of mRNA technology and all of these technologies have been a function of enormous government investment. But that's not even really the point, right? I mean, the point isn't whether the U.S. government and other governments have already invested in this stuff and should own part of it, although that's a separate argument, which I would also make. But now, at least, now that the Biden administration has been forced into announcing a commitment to waive the patents, and we'll see what the implications of that are. But now that they've been doing that, now we're seeing the sort of knock on a little bit more honest conversation about why folks were against the waiving of the patents. And here it is. I present to you Bloomberg News.
We have to be really careful with the language we use around this conversation. One thing the left has done has monopolized the moral high ground with a single perspective. And what it does, it does not allow people to ask legitimate questions. And I think the starting position is not that the Democrats want to help low and middle income countries and the conservatives, the Republicans do not. I don't see that. It's about how you help those countries. And that's the debate we need to have on a program like this. And when I hear you say things like Senator Warren would like the waiver.
Pause it for a second. So it's set up as if there is bullying from the left morally, because they're taking some type of moral high ground. But we really should be talking about how to do this. And in other words, there is no moral response to the idea that we should share vaccine technology with other countries. It's really just a question of like, well, how can we help these countries the best? But there is no one making the argument that we should stop at allowing these IP waivers. No one's making the argument we should allow the IP waivers and not give vaccines to these countries. No. In fact, we've already made a commitment to send 60 million doses to India. We should be sending as many doses as we can around the world. No one has any compunction with that. So it's not really a question of how. It's like, why would we constrain ourselves? Why wouldn't we throw the kitchen sink at this? But it is amazing how much they talk about this and never actually articulate what they say they can't say.
And that's such a key point, because they're not even saying that argument anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
Because they know it's so flimsy that, yeah, we can do both. We can give them vaccine doses now, and we can waive the IP so that there's mass production down the line.
Continue.
To Warren would like the waiver for IP. I think the worry that people have is that Senator Warren doesn't want it to stop there. She wants it to go further. Isn't that the real debate down in DC at the moment? That the freedoms people have lost, the freedom of movement, the freedom of speech, arguably, which is an argument going on down in DC at the moment. And if then we get into property rights, does it stop there just in the crisis, or does it go further? Isn't that the ultimate concern right now?
That is not necessarily the immediate concern, but the ultimate concern. I think you could make potentially a pretty persuasive slippery slope argument about how far this goes and what the effect would be potentially on vaccine production for who knows if this is even going to be the last pandemic that I live through. We don't know when the next time we're going to have such a worldwide effort to ramp up production of vaccines. So the long-term concerns are there. And when I say the moral arguments that have won the Biden administration, over, to be clear, these are moral arguments, but they're not the only moral arguments involved in this. So that has been so far the winning moral argument in terms of winning over the Biden administration, which is in control of this. But it does raise a lot of questions going forward for the long term. But really, a lot of the conversation in Washington is more on the immediate threats, even though there are concerns that mostly are being expressed on the right. A lot of, especially when you hear the Biden administration, a lot of the rhetoric around this is how to produce this vaccine right now as quickly as possible.
Yep.
They're complaining that's the only moral argument that's being presented.
And they're not presenting any alternate moral arguments because
exactly.
There isn't one.
Exactly.
But the long term, and let's be clear on what they mean by the long term and the slippery slope here. They are concerned. And they're not telling all of their concerns. The ones that they're expressing are, we don't know how this is going to impact vaccine production in the future. In other words, what's going to happen when we have all of this capacity to produce vaccines and we no longer can deploy the argument, they don't have the capacity to produce vaccines, why would we give them the IP? And not only just in general for vaccines for gosh knows what's going on, but we're not going to have the leverage to say this if there's another pandemic. I mean, literally, their argument is if we build vaccine creation production capacity, the pressure to give these other countries that cannot afford to develop, because look, there's just not other countries, or there's not as many other countries that can give five different companies $1 billion. To go produce a vaccine and roll the dice.
And when they say a slippery slope argument, what they mean is it's a slippery slope towards that exact
thing that you're saying,
that there will be an understanding worldwide that vaccine production can be done quickly. And so he says this may not be the only pandemic that I live through. That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. The fact that we should set up infrastructure for the next pandemic as climate change causes more encroachment into the wilderness. And as animals continue to pass these diseases onto humans, there will be another one down the line. So the slippery slope argument is purely about pharmaceutical profits. Think about how myopic and how sick in the head you have to be to think that that is the biggest issue here. No, no, no. This is a trend in the correct direction as more pandemics come around.
Well, and I will go further and say, forget pandemics. I hope the slope is incredibly slippery. In fact, I hope it's an elevator heading right down to the bottom of the slope because there is no reason why for a whole host of vaccinations and, frankly, other drugs, that we should not be investing billions of dollars into the development of these things and not use them for where they're needed around the world. We should no longer be sinking money into the development of drugs and of technologies and whatnot and allowing them to be gatekept by private entities that get these this money. I'm sorry. It's should not be doing it. So Bloomberg. I hope the slope is super, super slippery.
Bloomberg, we'll do you one better. Remove IP for all medicine.
There you go. All right.
Can I just say one thing on the TRIPS agreement? That was in the 90s. So this regime we have of IP, just insane IP protections is recent, and we can go back to prior.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And here we're at, and at least they were honest enough to almost sort of lay it out very clearly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton. Just a couple of words from our sponsors. I've talked about this story many times, so let me just start off by saying, hello, Mom. I know you're hearing this. I know you've heard, you may have heard this story before, and I'm sorry. But your kids lied to you. How did we lie to you? Well, years ago, 2 years ago, I think you'll remember, we started making sure that Freshly was available to you. Freshly, of course, is a chef-made, nutrient-packed meals that are delicious and delivered right to your door. As you know, Ma, there's no cooking required. So my sisters and I, we wanted to help my mom out so she didn't have to do so much cooking. We sent her Freshly. We were a little nervous that she wouldn't accept it from us, that we were paying for this. And so we told her that they were advertising on my show and that they had given me a lifetime free supply. And I had asked them to send it to you, Mom. My mother listens to the show. She watches the show.
Yes, yes. And hello, Sam's mom.
And so we sort of fibbed. And all those times where you would say to me, thank you so much. Thank them for sending it. The food is delicious, particularly the peppercorn steak. I know that's your favorite. And then just completely by freak, total chance, Freshly approached us through the media buyers that we have, the media broker, and said that we want to advertise on the show. And I was like, oh, great. And then I, not very smartly, told this story. And assume that you wouldn't be necessarily listening on that day, and you were. And so there it is. But the bottom line is now I have an opportunity. I have a great story to lead into this, Mom. And so thank you. And it was all worth it. And let's let bygones be bygones. Freshly.com allows you to choose over 30 meals, like my mother's favorite steak peppercorn or sausage baked penne or their chicken pesto bowl. And it can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work just for your needs. And for our listeners, they can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Your meals are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. Folks, check it out. Right now, Freshly's offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/majority. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/majority for $40 off your first two orders. That's Freshly.com/majority for $40 off your first two orders. And we got new copy for the the Hello Tushy.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes they get a little carried away with the...
Are you going to read it?
No, with the butt references and stuff like that. I'm not. I'm just going to tell you, I'll just tell you the story of the... During COVID, Kyle tells me, he's like, we got a bidet. It's changed my whole perspective on life. And I was like, I can't make that kind of investment. Hello Tushy shows up with their with the 2.0 Hello Tushy. It is a... it is a bidet attachment that you put onto your existing toilet. They now have the brand new 3.0. This is a modern bidet attachment. It is super easy to install. Install is not even the right word. It's attach. All you got to be able to do is if you know how to change your toilet seat and also turn a wrench or a screw, you're set. And the beauty of the Hello Tushy 3.0, it doesn't just clean your butt like a normal bidet. It also cleans itself with what they call the Smart Spray Automatic Nozzle. It attaches to your existing toilet. There is no electricity needed. There is no extra plumbing needed. You cut your toilet paper use by 80%, and you do what makes sense when it comes to cleaning your back end, which is water. Not dry paper. Hello Tushy has you covered from head to butt with a 60-day risk-free guarantee, a 12-month warranty, and now you can join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and clean your butt with every flush. Hello, go to hellotushy.com/majority for 10% off plus free shipping. Special offer for Majority Report listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/majority for 10% off. hellotushy.com/majority. And lastly, one of our sponsors today, sunsetlakecbd.com. It is, it has been my main go-to for going to sleep in a natural way. I don't know, no longer need those prescription drugs to get to sleep at night. I use the tincture, and it has been really effective for me. I also use the salve with arnica and CBD for... It's ostensibly for sore muscles. I use it for like dry skin and eczema, but your mileage may vary. Matt, who was a skeptic when it came to smoking CBD, he tried Sunset Lake's CBDs. His smalls are his favorite. He is a convert. Of course, you mix it in with the now legal cannabis in this state. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah, I got some new lifter smalls now, actually, that I was going to mix up.
And they also have great gummies that people love. They have CBD infused fudge, CBD infused coffee, which is a fantastic weekend brew for me. I sometimes will have a pre-roll. All great products. They're a great company. They're mostly employee owned, $15 minimum wage. They are 100% organic. They don't use, they are pesticide free. They're using a regenerative farming practices from the University of Vermont. Check it out. SunsetLakeCBD.com. SunsetLakesCBD.com. You can find the URL in our podcast description and our YouTube description. And if you use the coupon code LEFTISBEST, they're fans of the show. They're great guys. LEFTISBEST, you get 20% off. Check it out now. Left is best. SunsetLakeCBD.com. All right. It's Casual Friday, and it's always a treat to welcome to the program the great Heather Parton, or you may know her as Digby. Welcome to the program. Heather, are you there?
Just about connected.
Okay. Here she is. She's coming.
What a beautiful tapestry.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay, so Heather, a lot of things to talk about this week. On one hand, we got the IP stuff, and which shows at least in certain narrow circumstances, Biden can be pushed. Also, we have on the Joe Manchin Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden front, things happening in that regard where Manchin's saying, we're not doing this without the Republicans. And the Republicans are saying, we're not doing this. And Joe Biden sort of going back and forth with pay-fors, and Janet Yellen sort of talking about like a deficit obsession, but it's not quite clear. But let's start with the Republicans, because this thing with Liz Cheney is sort of fascinating. There has been a coalescing around Donald Trump as the central reason for the Republican Party at this point. And I'm not being, this is not hyperbole. I mean, let's play this clip of Lindsey Graham. Actually, let's start with this clip of Chuck Hagel. And then we can, is it Hagel? Who was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's play this clip of Chuck Hagel. This is the former defense secretary. This is like the imaginary Republican that Joe Manchin seems to think exists or pretends exists. And maybe some in the Beltway media still think exists. But he doesn't. This is we are looking at a museum piece in Chuck Hagel. Here it is.
I think the state of the GOP today is divided. It's polarized. It's going to continue to be divided and polarized going into the election next year. I mean, you can't have a defeated president who, by the way, during his 4 years, the Republicans lost both the House and the Senate. He was defeated for re-election, and have that candidate and that former president claim that he's still leader of the party, and the party must be loyal to him. The party is always bigger than an individual. I don't care who the president is. And Mr. Trump's not accepting that. And that is going to continue to divide the party and divide the party in a very corrosive way, because it is about truth. It is about being honest. It is about the core values of our country, of what a party should represent.
Don't need to hear any more when he goes into that pablum, because the bottom line is, I don't know of, it's never been the case in my, I mean, I guess there was a certain fealty to Reagan on some level from the party, but I've never seen this dynamic. I mean, you never talked about this being, you know, Obama's party. You never heard anybody come out and saying, like, I'm going to, like, with fealty to Obama. Just even the conversation existing itself is bizarre, but Hagel's absolutely wrong. This guy's a museum piece. Let's talk to a sitting Republican senator right now. His name is Lindsey Graham. You remember Lindsey Graham, the one who 5 years ago was like, Donald Trump is a scumbag. And
he's a racist and he will destroy the Republican Party over and over. That's what he said.
Yeah, he's giving out my cell phone number. Here's
real quick.
Just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no. I've always liked Liz Cheney, but she's made a determination that the Republican Party can't grow with President Trump. I've determined we can't grow without him. All of these people like Herschel Walker and all the people you just named are attracted to the Trump Republican Party. Economic populism, America First agenda. If you don't get that, as a Republican, you're making the biggest mistake in the history of the Republican Party. The reason our party...
Heather, and this is playing out in the Republican House right now.
Oh, it is. And you know, I hate to say it, but I don't think the Republican Party can grow with Trumpism. At least, God help us, I hope it can't. But I totally think and agree with Lindsey Graham that the party itself has made that decision. It's done. There's no war. There's no civil war. I mean, there's Liz Cheney and a couple of, you know, holdouts, and very few. I mean, think about how few there are. I mean, this is like, you know, what have you got? Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, you know, Gonzalez in Ohio. There's a handful. And Mitt Romney in the Senate, basically. And even he now is suddenly kind of, you know, moving in the other direction. So I just don't think that there is a war. I think it's done. I think that the Trumpism won. I don't know. It's a very interesting thing. Chris Hayes was talking about this week. that it's interesting that even as Trump has faded from the national consciousness in terms of media, right? I mean, he's just not really, really very visible at all. I mean, those political junkies like us, you know, we read what he says and we are all what's going on in Mar-a-Lago and who's going down there and what's going on. We're following the sort of inside game that's going on within the party. But generally speaking, the guy is just not very visible. I mean, he's been kicked off the social media platforms. He calls in for an interview every once in a while. He goes to places like OAN. But really, it's like I saw some statistic, 90%. Fewer media, less media discussion than there was before he left office, which stands to reason. He's an ex-president. Who really gives a damn, right? I mean, we shouldn't care about what he's saying. But his influence has not really waned among the faithful. They are still 70% believe the election was still stolen. They're working night and day to, you know, apparently still think they can overturn the election in some cases, or at the very least, they can rig it so that the next election basically you've got to walk through hot coals to place a vote anywhere. So, you know, they are still the party itself is still consumed with Trump. And it's weird.
Yeah.
Because I think we thought that he was a media creature. It's something more than that. This is an idea. This is a cult like devotion that is not as much a cult of personality as we thought. There's something more going on here, which I'm, you know, a little bit, you know, confused by. I honestly did not expect that. I mean, I honestly did not expect that it would continue with this much fervor without him being on the scene. Now, maybe it will wane. Yeah, it's still early days. It's only been a few months since he left, but I am surprised, I have to say. And part of it, I mean, look what happened. You had the insurrection on the 6th and January 6th, and a bunch of Republicans, you could tell, even somebody like Kevin McCarthy, certainly Mitch McConnell, they were all kind of going, whoa, you know, it's all right, we're done now, let's just move along. They, you know, Trump really screwed the pooch on that one, and we're gonna start to move away from him. And they kind of did in their own weak, cowardly way. But it's backslid now. I mean, McConnell's refusing to talk about it. They're going to use Liz Cheney as a human sacrifice for the angry God, Donald Trump. They've got Kevin McCarthy now is just, you know, all in. He's actually backtracking on things he said after January 6th, refusing to do the commission, you know, all these things that are just really, I mean, they are locking Trump in as their basically, I think, their nominee for 2024 if he wants it. And it sounds this week like he does. He said, you know, everybody, I don't know what it is. People who like me or my followers are going to be very happy when they hear that, when they hear a certain announcement. So I think we know what he's going to do. When they hear a certain announcement.
Sorry, Heather. I almost called a few times, but I just was so eager to jump on this Mitt Romney example because we didn't cover it last week. But, you know, you hear the political consensus about like the respectable Utah Republican voter. And how Utah Republicans, they want some sort of old school, like the way Chuck Hagel's describing the Republican Party of truth and of honor and of, you know, constitutionality, which is ridiculous. But the Utah Republicans tended to, I guess, at least see themselves that way. At the Utah GOP state convention, Mitt Romney was heckled by people in Utah, his own, you know, constituents that elected that kind of guy. Like, I don't even know if Mitt Romney could get primaried down the line in Utah just because of how far this party has fallen into Trumpism.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's such a good point because he and people all at the end of that heckling session, we all saw the video, you know, and it was humiliating. It was horrible. I mean, they were just booing him and, you know, and he's sort of half-heartedly standing there going, well, I didn't care for his character or something. He wasn't really, you know, talking about the fact that he tried to, you know, overturn a legal election. But they were voting on a censure for him and it failed. But people didn't note what the actual vote was. It was like 788 to 711. I mean, it was, you know, fairly close. I mean, it wasn't like, so I think you're right, Emma, that this is a serious possibility that he could get primaried. In fact, I expect it. I mean, of course. And Donald Trump is going to be behind it. He now is, you know, he's the kingmaker who's endorsing everyone. And that's another thing that's sort of interesting is that he, you know, he endorsed this woman down in Texas. They had that special election a week or so ago. I think her name was Wright. And her husband had died and she was running to replace him, which is, you know, a common thing. And very often the wives of a deceased, you know, representative will win the office. It happens all the time. But there was a big crowd on that ticket. There was a there was a couple of Democrats. No one really expected the Democrat to win, but there were a whole bunch of Republicans on there, and it's going to go to a runoff. And as it turns out, the Trump-endorsed person, he endorsed the wife, who was probably going to come in first anyway. He endorsed her, and he was, you know, he's the big kingmaker. This is going to make all the difference. She came in at 19%. Now, she came in first because it was a big, you know, it was a big crowd. But does that speak to you that he has that kind of clout? So I don't, you know, he has so much clout that, you know, they all have to kowtow to him. I mean, I just don't know. Is it, is the polling correct or is it incorrect or is, you know, we're going to see some more real world examples here coming up in these special elections that come up in off years where Trump is going to be endorsing. And I don't know, I saw a thing on 538 where they went back and looked and his endorsements
not good.
Never really had that much clout.
No, not good. And, you know, and this is, and I mean, this is really sort of a fascinating question here because, and let me also just make it clear. I almost feel like obligated to say this. I'm glad they're getting rid of Liz Cheney. I wish they would get rid of all of the Republicans. Way for them to kick all of the Republicans out of office and have just one left. If Donald Trump could get all of the, I would be happy. Liz Cheney comes from a very, very odious, not only is the Republican Party as it exists today, a direct natural, I think, outgrowth of what the Cheneys and her wing of the party, to the extent that it's any different from the wing that exists now, had created in this country. But she's odious. And, you know, like I've been saying, I am excited for the Republican Party to eat her, you know, for lunch or breakfast, but I just hope that they also choke on her bones. I mean, like that is, I want it all. And I don't think they're going to choke on her bones.
On
I don't think
bones?
There's on Cheney's bones.
I know you keep saying yeah. Lynn. And I just had
Liz Cheney's, Liz Cheney's. I don't think they're going to choke on her bones, but nevertheless, so I'm happy to see her go. What's interesting too, there was a piece today, I think it was in The Hill about, the Trump people saying, hey, you know, it's not just Cheney that is a problem. It is also Kevin McCarthy's not a shoo-in for being Speaker of the House, right? Now, this is anticipating the Republicans winning the House, which I think has to be the odds on favorite thing of what's happening in 2022. I mean, just statistically speaking, and you're seeing a lot of, retirements by Democrats and, you know, gerrymandering as to what it is, et cetera, et cetera. And so Trump is trying to solidify all of the power. I mean, McCarthy, right. Like you said, he went out and, you know, on the first couple of days after the 6th, they all thought like, okay, the era of Trump is over. And then something happened that you have Kevin McCarthy going down to Florida to apologize in person, essentially, to Trump. And I don't know if it was just a question of polling, but it also could be a function of, like you say, it could be a function of the right is in its own, has its own media universe now. And so what normal people experience on their average day may not be reflected in the activist base of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is very homogenous in many in both thought and in just demographics. So it's quite possible that what is what is appealing to, you know, their base of 15, 20 million people, whatever it is, it just sort of like dissipates out to the other Republicans. It could also be that they have a massive email list. There's a whole myriad of things, and the ecosystem is still exists, you know, where you get like, you know, I make money by pushing Donald Trump stuff on Facebook. I mean, you know, like something like that. It is fascinating, though, that because but when it comes down to pushing a specific candidate, he doesn't win. We've seen this, you know, look, it didn't work in Georgia, right? But I think the idea is that he represents the maximum Republican turnout machine, and they feel like they're going to win in years where there isn't, like, Trump not having power, but being a central organizing principle of the Republican Party is probably the best case scenario for them, because then there's no Democrats coming out to vote against Trump and bringing out numbers that we haven't seen in you know, mid off year elections in nearly a lifetime. But they still rally their base in the same way because he's the organizing principle. I mean, I think that's got to be the calculation they're making.
Saying if he's on the ballot, though, right?
No, not if he's on the ballot. Just if he's in there churning stuff up, he gets out his base.
But you're saying it wasn't effective, his endorsements.
His endorsements aren't. But just the existence of him out there creating this anger towards, you know, immigration, towards whatever it is, the aggrievement of the day, he's their aggrievement, like, you know, dilithium crystal that's down in the engineering room, but he's just not up on the deck and isn't the first person that, you know, like the other, you know, people or beings meet, to use a Star Trek But I mean, does that make sense, Heather?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that what he does, and let's not forget that one of Trump's, he only has a few overriding philosophies in his life. And one of the main ones is that you always, always exact revenge. He is the most vengeful person I've ever come across in my life. He says it outright. There's video of him back in the 80s. Saying, you know, of course I like to get revenge. Don't you? Revenge is everything. You've got to teach people that if you mess with me, I'm going to come back at you twice as hard. This is, I mean, and there's nothing that Trump wants more than in the world than to get revenge against the Democrats for having stolen the election. So I think that has kind of, and I think there's a strong element of that in the Republican base, generally speaking. It's a temperamental thing. It's the way you look at the world, you know, a Manichaean up us against them kind of thing. So I think that by stoking the big lie, which is really the thing that has the entire, that 70% of the Republican Party up in arms because they believe the election was stolen, that Trump out there, you know, flogging that over the course of the next couple of years, which of course he will be, and they're passing laws based on it. I mean, this is not just some incidental sort of messaging thing. They're actually doing things on the basis of that big lie, that is what is going to keep them churned up. Now, whether or not it works, and I think mostly you're going to see this in primaries, right? I mean, Trump endorses somebody in a primary, that may not work for them. You know, I mean, they may go in and vote for another Republican. But the idea of getting vengeance against the Democrats for having stolen the election, and we've got to take back power, and we've got to strip Biden of his ability to do anything, and blah, blah, you know, all of that, because Biden stole the election. I think that's a big motivating force for their get out the vote. And I think that's one of the main reasons why they are, you know, everybody now in the party, except for Liz Cheney, apparently, and two or three others, at least in the national party and across the board in the states where the Republicans have power, that they're just going along with this big lie. They're not trying to, you know, even though Republicans in those states at the time were certifying elections, were saying, no, the vote was fair, where you had the judges that had been even been appointed by Trump who were saying, no, you know, there's no legal basis for your complaints, et cetera, et cetera. Despite all that, now they are now purging those people from the party. And I really think a lot of this just has to do with the opportunistic will to power on the part of the Republican Party, in which they see an opportunity to really, really degrade the democratic process to the point where they can now, I mean, they're using Trump's big lie. And I don't think they care about Trump. I mean, he's kind of a pain in the neck, right? I mean, he's not some, you know, it's about what he does for them. It's like, you know, Lindsey Graham, although that's the most fatuous comment. Can I just digress a minute here? That comment, we can't grow the party without Donald Trump. Look at Herschel Walker. So one black guy who's also, you know, well, just I hope that Herschel runs. Let me just put it that way. I'm really looking forward to the debate between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock, because that is going to be great. Herschel Walker is a real piece of work. Let me just put it that way. And I'll let it unfold for all of you. I don't know if he'll make it because there are issues there, but Herschel Walker has a past and a present that is not, it's not, let's just say it's not, he is not someone who you would want to have on a big national stage representing your party, because he's got problems. And they're big ones.
What's amazing too is that, like, do you remember the thing that they were running against Barack Obama in 2008? It was, he's just a celebrity.
Can you believe it?
The turnaround in this party is just sort of stunning. Like, that struck me too, is where Lindsey Graham is talking about, like, we're not going to get the Herschel Walkers in terms of candidates. Like, wow, that is like the former football player.
It's grosser than that too. I mean, it just, it shows the shallowness with which they see pandering, really. Well, I mean, they really think that they can manipulate voters.
Yeah.
They have such disdain for their voters or for people that they want to win over ostensibly that, you know, we'll just put, you know, black.
Well,
there we go.
Yeah, I mean, look what they're doing in California. They managed to get a recall on the ballot. It's probably going to happen, and waste $400 million in California for no good reason, since there's an election coming up in less than 2 years. We could wait if they really want to get rid of Newsom. But they're doing this thing purely, you know, it's a grift. Most that all these Trump people like Brad Parscale are in here in California just collecting vast sums of money from, you know, idiots who are sending it to them. And they, you know, they call up Caitlyn Jenner, and, you know, that's another case of this pandering, right? I mean, they think, oh, look, we'll get, you know, this will be something where the trans community in California, you know, those liberals there, they're all going to be so confused. They won't know who to vote for now. They're just going to vote for, you know, how can they help but vote for Caitlyn Jenner, when Caitlyn Jenner is a right winger and always has been. And, you know, I don't think the trans community, generally speaking, I'm sure there are, you know, there are exceptions, just like Caitlyn Jenner. But for the most part, it's doubtful that the trans community is going to, or and their allies, I shouldn't just say them, but their allies, people who care about the subject, are not going to vote for Caitlyn Jenner because she's a member of a party that is trying to destroy the lives of young trans people all over the country. I mean, denying them things like medical care in places like Texas. Families are having to move out of Texas. They're so terrified that their kids aren't going to be able to get medical care. So that's it. You know, they have this really, it's what Emma says, it's this superficial idea of how to attract, you know, people of color or you know, minorities or you know, various parts of the community without ever addressing the fact that their party is hostile to those communities virtually on every level. They just think they can do it by throwing out Herschel Walker or Caitlyn Jenner. And it's offensive, really.
I don't even think they wanted Caitlyn. I mean, Caitlyn Jenner, it just seems, yeah. It's like when, I mean, they're part of the same family. It's like when Kanye did it. It's like a narcissistic project. I mean, I think they, like Hannity in that interview was like, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean,
she doesn't.
they have, I think they're like, I think they're disgusted by her mostly.
Who knows? But I want to just get back to where, you know, the functionality of Trump. It feels a little bit like, because all of this stuff, like we've seen this, you know, the DeSantis stuff, you know, DeSantis is like literally, it's like it's getting to, you know, like single white female territory in terms of that movie with DeSantis and Trump, like down to the entire productions and this and that. I think he's just hedging his bet. Maybe Trump doesn't run. He becomes the de facto Trump. But there is a quality of like it in the same way that Democrats have always had this problem of taking their cues from, meet the press or the Beltway media, you know, or whatever any of those folks are taking, sort of almost completely divorced from, you know, the op-ed that Larry Summers writes that is easily sort of just shown to be completely contradictory from where he was, you know, months earlier or something like that. Like that conventional Beltway, we used to call it the village media, influences the Democrats in a both inexplicable and far more impactful way than it should. It almost feels like, because it's completely divorced from like what their voters want. I think there's a little bit of that with Trump that's developing with the Republican Party. Like the establishment of the Republican Party sees Trump as having some type of mystical quality.
Yes.
That in the same way that the Democrats look upon like the conventional wisdom in the has some type of mystical quality that they can't quite break out of. Like, I just don't know why Kevin McCarthy, and it could be just that also the people who've been elected now in the Republican Party could just be full on Trumpistas. And so they have an outweighed impact on the groupthink of the Republican Party. Like, you know, what used to be the margins are now really just firmly in control of the party, and so they lead in that direction. And if you guys want your tax cuts, you better come along with us, because we're the only way that you're going to get them. I mean, that seems like it. I mean, there's no, I have no idea what the Republican Party is going to do if they get into power. Nothing. If there's a Democratic president, they won't be able to do anything. Except for, you know, maybe slow down appointments and stuff like that in the Senate. But they have no legislative agenda. None.
Well, I think I know what they're going to do if they win. They're going to impeach Joe Biden. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If they have the majority in both houses, that is going to happen. It'll, you know, that it's a given. So, you know, enjoy, everybody. Have another, you know, spectacle here. You know, they'll find some reason to impeach him. But they don't have an agenda. No, they don't have an agenda. They didn't have one when Trump was in. I mean, you know, there was build the wall, cut taxes. They tried to repeal Obamacare. And I'm not even sure their heart was really in that, because they didn't try it again, and they could have worked at it. You know, McCain left. I mean, they could have tried again. He died in office, and he was the one vote that made the difference. They didn't try it again. So their heart wasn't really in that. They don't have anything. I mean, it has become clear that they are now in it's a will to power. And, you know, that's Trump, right? I mean, Trump wanted to be president, not because he had some grand vision for the world. It's because he wanted to be the most famous, important guy in the world. The end, goodbye. It had nothing to do with reality.
What do you think of the reports that there is some push for Donald Trump as the Speaker of the House?
Oh, God, I hadn't heard that. Speaker, oh my God.
You can elect anybody Speaker of the House. And it would be fascinating.
He sure knows how to speak.
If the Democrats lose to the Republicans in 2022 and there's an election for the Speaker of the House, it could be Donald Trump. I mean,
that's hilarious.
And I don't know. That's something, you know, it's a little bit early to contemplate.
How much work is that?
I can have other people do the gavel, right? Like I'll just,
I don't have to be there. Do I?
But the swinging of the gavel, a little too much physical exertion.
It's bad for you.
Can I do it through teleconferencing? Can I do it? That'll be interesting. All right. Well, listen, we just have a couple of minutes here. What do you make about what's happening with the Democrats? I mean, I sort of feel like we are still sort of in this like holding pattern where we can't really tell. But do you think Mitch McConnell coming out and saying 100% my agenda is to get rid of Joe Biden, not to work with him, is going to have any impact on Manchin?
I think that it might, because Mitch McConnell walked that statement back and the next day came out and said, well, what I mean is that, you know, yeah, we'll work with him while we can, something like that. But, you know, I mean, we're not going to go along with this, blah, blah, blah. And he was not quite as unequivocal. And I think it's pretty clear when I saw that, that he realized that he had stepped in it, that he probably had messed up whatever, you know, sort of strategy that they had going there to keep Manchin on their, you know, on their side of the aisle. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, this is a ridiculous system that we have. We have, you know, this one guy from West Virginia and maybe a couple of other outliers out in Arizona that somehow or another they get to decide whether or not, you know, the agenda is going to pass. It's absolutely crazy, but they do. And even if they get rid of the filibuster, they still decide. I mean, this is not like that particular thing is going to go away in this narrow majority. So I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I do think that the jobs report today, which was, you know, widely considered a disappointment, it was a good jobs report, but it didn't meet the expectations because of the strong growth that people are expecting post-pandemic. I think that's actually good news.
I agree.
I mean, do we need an infrastructure plan? Yes, we do. I think we need it because this is not actually, you know, bursting. The economy isn't bursting with activity.
Hunger rates have plummeted after the two rounds of stimulus. Saw this report today. And that is great news. I think there is some evidence in these job numbers, apparently, that on the low, low wage end, that there are some shortages of workers, which I also think is good news because maybe those wages shouldn't be so low. Mm-hmm. The problem with these type of numbers coming out and being good, particularly in these moments, right, is that they become leverage points for people going like, we need to tap on the brakes now.
Because we're
headed towards success. So we need to what if we go past success in a lot of success and then we're in trouble. And so I'm with you on this. I hope the numbers look, you know, as shaky as possible for the next 2 months, let's say. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're in better place than we were 3 months ago, and certainly better place than we were 6 months ago. But I hope the numbers continue to look like they are less than expected, because you don't then hear people going, we got to be careful of the economy heating over, and we got to be careful about giving too much to the American public, and we got to be careful about having government do too much, because it's going to... I love the idea that, like, only the government spending can create inflation and create bad things.
But I know.
It can't create jobs. Can't create jobs. It just can create...
That's the private sector only.
It's fascinating. And we should say, if you look at this, you know, what people are saying is a sort of a disappointing jobs numbers. 50,000 of those, 250,000 jobs came from the government. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of sectors that just haven't picked up yet. And I mean, look, maybe it's the government is paying that much more than unemployment, or maybe it's just like there aren't the jobs out there that we keep hearing people say there are yet. People have not come out. It takes a while for supplies to catch up and this and that. And so, yes, I am totally down with some less than stellar jobs numbers for the next couple of months, let's say, until we get this infrastructure and this American Families Plan. Look, the American Families Plan, they came out today, 60% support from the American public. That's almost like 20% more than Joe Biden got when he won the presidency. So, I mean, this is the way, you know, this is the way forward. But you hear stuff like, I don't know how we don't have time to get into, like, you know, Warner, you know, starting to wave his freak flag and saying, I don't want to get too caught up here. And the, you know, the so-called SALT caucus saying we'll sink the bill if we don't get full deduction relief. But I think we'll have more opportunity, fortunately, to talk to you about it. But sadly, because it's still going to be kicking around in the near future. So Heather Parton Digby, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend. Thanks,
you Heather, too.
You too.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap things up for the week. And then after that, Steve Donziger, we will be talking to him in just a moment. Folks, we're going to take a, we're going to wrap things up in just a moment, for those who are watching the program on, Peacock, but we should just say that, coming up, we're going to be talking to Steve, Donziger. He is an attorney who, represented, indigenous, people and farmers in a case from Ecuador, where Chevron had been found by, and this went all the way up to the Ecuadorian Supreme Court, have for causing billions of dollars worth of environmental and health damages. In 2011, these affected communities won a $9.5 billion judgment against Chevron. Chevron then claimed that there was all sorts of corruption that was involved in this case. They moved it to the United States. They got a federal judge who was sympathetic, and the rest becomes completely insane. And we will be talking to Steve Donziger about that in just a moment. So if you are staying with us, stick around for that. For the rest of you, we'll be back on Monday, right, Emma?
Yes, we will.
So
see you on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Have a lovely weekend, folks. Big spring weekend.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. We will see you on Monday. And for those of you who are sticking around,
yes,
want to welcome to the program attorney Steve Donziger. He is under house arrest. He has been under house arrest for over 300 days. And he will explain to us. He has a hearing on Monday, which is also one of the most bizarre hearings that I've ever been made aware of, in terms of the who is prosecuting him. And frankly, the judge that is hearing this, and it is, here he is. Steve, you there?
Hey guys.
Hey, can you, yeah, there you go.
Sorry about that. Wasn't really available.
All right.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you. I'm here with Emma Vigeland. So, Steve, I went into your, the circumstances of your case a little bit, but Will you just tell us your story, and then we'll get into the hearing that's happening on Monday? And of course, we should say you have now dozens of Nobel laureates who have signed a letter in support and asking for Congress to look into this, and the Department of Justice in particular, to intervene. You have Congress people who did this a couple of weeks ago. But before we get there, just walk us through the timeline here of your story. It is an amazing and, in many respects, bizarre story. And frankly, difficult for you, obviously.
Thank you, Sam, for having me, Sam and Emma. So this is the fundamentals. It's a long story. I'll try to reduce it to a minute. You know, I'm a lawyer, human rights lawyer. I went to Ecuador in the early 90s with a group of lawyers. We discovered, or were told about, and then confirmed that there was a terrible oil contamination that had taken place over many years, caused by Texaco, an American oil company, where they deliberately dumped literally billions of gallons of cancer-causing oil waste onto indigenous ancestral lands in the Amazon rainforest. Started in the mid-60s, went to the early 90s. We went there in 93. We met the people. We saw giant lakes of oil on the floor of the rainforest, hundreds of open-air, unlined waste pits where there were pipes they built that were running this into rivers and streams that the indigenous groups relied on for their drinking water. They basically created a mass industrial poisoning of the forest that exposed the local populations to constant harm, including, you know, drinking poison water and breathing contaminated air and eating contaminated food. And over time, it just killed a lot of people. We filed a lawsuit in 93 in New York. Chevron eventually bought Texaco. They defended it. They insisted the case take place in Ecuador. They accepted jurisdiction. It happened in Ecuador, and in 2011, we won a historic judgment against Chevron. Rather than pay the judgment, Chevron threatened the indigenous groups with a lifetime of litigation, engaged in all sorts of subterfuge and sabotage of the legal process. And most importantly, for my purposes, they adopted a defense strategy to demonize me, which included using 60 law firms and 2,000 lawyers to try to just knock me out of the case. And the way they've done that is they have sued me for under a civil racketeering statute in the same U.S. court where they didn't want the original trial to be held. They denied me a jury. They paid a witness to claim I bribed a judge in Ecuador. I did not bribe a judge. And that allegation has been refuted by 28 appellate judges in Ecuador and Canada who have ruled to validate the Ecuador judgment. And over time, as we kept going, they kept upping the ante to the point where they asked for my computer and cell phone. I refused to give it to them. It contains confidential information, attorney-client privileged, protected information. And I appealed that order, which I believe is unlawful. And while it was on appeal, you know, I'm a rule of law guy, by the way. I believe in the law, and I was abiding by the normal court processes when I did that. Judge Kaplan, who's the judge who's been targeting me, charged me with criminal contempt of court for not complying with the legal order that I was appealing to a higher court. And that's when he locked me up. And I've been here. This is, by the way, a misdemeanor charge. And I've been in my home with an ankle bracelet, imprisoned in my own home, which is a two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan where I live with my wife and son, for 640 days without trial.
I may have said 300 before. That's stunning. And there, I just want to go back over a couple of these things that really stick out for me. First off, this is when they sued you, or when this RICO charge is not, I want to make it clear to everybody, this is not a criminal charge. This is a civil proceedings. So they're suing you and saying that you were involved in some enterprise to defraud them. And they bring in, Alberto Guerra. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. He was the Ecuadorian judge. They moved him and his family to the United States. They paid for his health insurance and his car and gave him a ton of money. They met with him more than 50 times. He provided this testimony. And then he recanted on a lot of it, in addition to the fact there was a lot of people who refuted it. So how does the judge in a federal civil trial, just to be clear here, this is a lawsuit. I've been sued. I've talked to people who sued people. How does that, your lack of turning over attorney-client privileged stuff, how does that mutate across into the world of criminal contempt? Is it, wouldn't you be in civil contempt of the court?
Well, that's the, thank you for, that is the critical question. Thank you for honing in on that. Of course, this is not criminal. This is a civil dispute in a civil litigation between two parties who are litigating. That's what I was doing, as any lawyer would do. So there's something a little deeper going on here, which is that we have a judge, Judge Kaplan, who I believe is abusing his authority as a lifetime appointee to try to destroy the Ecuador judgment because he's trying to protect a big American oil company from the legal rights of indigenous peoples in the Amazon. And they're using me in my situation to do it. And yes, it's civil discovery dispute. Sam, I've never heard, and no lawyer I know has ever heard of a lawyer involved in a civil discovery dispute being prosecuted criminally for appealing an order. Never happened before. I'm the first one. So this is wrong in every step of the way. I've been targeted by Chevron-linked judges. Judge Kaplan has investments in Chevron. Judge Preska, who he appointed, rather than going through the random selection process, who locked me up. She's a member or leader of the Federalist Society. Chevron's a major donor. She's a right-wing judge, pro-corporate. And they're colluding to destroy me. Kaplan denied me a jury. Preska's denying me a jury. They're going to try to railroad me into prison on this, what I think is a baseless criminal contempt charge, without a jury, with no due process of law. And the judge is doing it, in my view, are abusing their power.
All right. So there's another part of this that also makes absolutely no sense to me. It is very rare that you go to prison without a jury hearing this. That's a tenet of our judicial system. But this I've never heard of. So they go to the Department of Justice and they say, prosecute this guy for a criminal charge of contempt. And the DOJ says, we don't want to. We're not doing it. The government's not bringing the prosecution. They have, not only did this first judge, Kaplan, pick which judge is going to sit on your case, which is not unheard of, but it is very rare. This judge, the second judge, Preska, turns around and basically deputizes a private law firm to function as the prosecutor. I've never heard of that. Has that ever happened before? I mean, have you heard of other cases? As you, I imagine right now you and your attorneys are going through this and saying, are there examples of this in the history of, I don't know, modern law in the country?
So in America, we don't prosecute people privately. Okay. The people who prosecute are executive branch officials from the DOJ or the U.S. attorney's offices around the country. They have the public function of prosecuting. They're all professionals and they're all disinterested, meaning they don't have a personal interest in the outcome. This is radically different. This is a different animal altogether, and I believe it's corrupt. Now, there are very rare occasions where it is appropriate to have a private prosecutor. In those rare instances where the local prosecutor's office has some sort of conflict of interest. But in those situations, the prosecutor needs to be disinterested, even if he or she is a private citizen. They can't have an interest in the outcome. In this case, which is unprecedented, first of all, Judge Kaplan's charges were rejected by the public prosecutor. They're like, we're not prosecuting. He should have dropped it at that point. Doesn't that tell you something? Instead, he kept going and he appointed a private law firm. And this law firm had me locked up in collaboration with the judge he appointed on August 6, 2019, 640 days ago. They put an ankle bracelet on a lawyer who didn't have one single client grievance his whole life and who was a successful human rights advocate for people of Ecuador. They locked me up, and they locked me up to prevent me from doing my job, which would have exposed Judge Kaplan as well as Chevron for the corruption that I believe they've engaged in. Worst, after I got locked up, I had a sneaking suspicion that the law firm prosecuting me wasn't just any law firm. And we did an investigation and we found out that they had ties to Chevron. How? 7 months later, they finally admitted that Chevron had been an actual client of the firm just a few months before they had me locked up. They represent Oak Tree Capital, which is a hedge fund that has $120 billion. They do major deals in the oil and gas industry. Two Oaktree executives served at the time on Chevron's board of directors. Okay, that's the law firm's big client. The corruption here is astounding. And the scary part is this is the first time in American history where a oil company has wrested control of the prosecutorial machinery, the power to prosecute, that precious power to deprive someone of his or her liberty. They have it in their hands and they're going whole hog against me, abusing that power. And that's why right now we are begging, calling on the DOJ, Merrick Garland, to stop this, okay? Come in and take this case over from the Chevron law firm and prosecute me directly. I'm probably the only lawyer in America begging to be prosecuted right now by the DOJ. I need a professional. These people won't negotiate a resolution. They won't negotiate a plea. Their goal is to destroy me, and they are abusing our system to do so with no due process of law. I'm in a very vulnerable position. If the DOJ doesn't step in, they're going to railroad me into prison. And frankly, I have a lot of fears right now. I don't think they want me to continue this advocacy, and they'll do almost anything to stop me.
Yeah, I'm incredibly outraged and enraged by your story. And I just want to make this clear for the audience because, you know, you've shown the connection between Chevron and the law firm here. What is Lewis Kaplan, this senior judge who's in the Southern District? I mean, incredibly powerful. What is his connection in this corruption? Like, how does he personally benefit?
I'm trying to figure out that guy for years. He's been targeting me for years. I'll mention that there's a 50-page misconduct complaint filed against him for his abuse of power, signed by 200 lawyers, that's wow, sitting before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and they just sit on it for months. I mean, they don't even open an investigation. They all protect each other, and it's getting really bad. But in terms of Kaplan, before he was appointed to the bench by President Clinton, he was a tobacco industry defense lawyer. He represented Philip Morris, Brown and Williamson. He was at the highest levels of the defense committee. They were employing every legal trick in the book to prevent liability being imposed on the tobacco industry, an industry based on the idea you're going to kill 5 million people a year around the globe. This is his background. Then he gets on the bench. He's just very pro-corporate. And I think when Chevron steered this case to him, he wanted to carry out his ideological agenda and destroy the idea that Ecuadorian indigenous peoples can actually get their own courts to impose a large judgment on an American company that abused their human rights. He hated that. And he basically tried to engineer the outcome of the case by structuring it in a way that we couldn't present evidence. I mean, he decided this case on day one before he heard any evidence. I could tell. And the way he did that is he wouldn't look at any of the environmental evidence. He let Chevron pay Guerra $2 million to come in and lie. Guerra later admitted lying. He still accepted his story. And he engaged in all sorts of other tricks of the legal trade, if you're a judge who wants to abuse his power, to make sure I was convicted without a jury of crimes in a civil case. I've never been charged with those crimes, much less convicted. But if you look at the media reporting and some of the press, or what Chevron says is Donziger has been adjudicated guilty of extortion, money laundering, wire fraud, obstruction. These are all things he found that I did without any basis. It was all based on this false testimony from this witness who said I bribed the judge in Ecuador when it never happened. And that's been rejected, by the way, by 28 appellate judges in Ecuador and Canada, including the Supreme Courts of both of those countries. So you basically have, let's look at the landscape here. You have one low-level U.S. trial judge who found a fraud occurred in Ecuador, and you have 28 appellate judges in Ecuador and Canada, including the Supreme Courts of both countries, who found it did not occur and that the judgment was valid and that the real fraud is the evidence Chevron put in before Kaplan to try to accuse me of fraud. That's the fraud, not what I did. It's what they did. So you have one U.S. trial judge trying to overturn the decisions of the Supreme Courts of two sovereign nations. It's inappropriate. It's arrogant. It's imperialist. And it's wrong. Now, imagine this. Imagine if the role was reversed and some first level Ecuadorian trial judge tried to do the same to our Supreme Court, how much that person would be laughed at. Okay, and that's what Kaplan has tried to do to Ecuador's Supreme Court and Canada's Supreme Court. When I say Ecuador, this is the country where Chevron insisted the trial be held, where Chevron accepted jurisdiction, the same courts that Chevron praised throughout the 1990s when he was trying to move the case out of the U.S. to Ecuador.
All right, so what is, and we should remind people, the reason why they can't charge you with criminal fraud in this country, right? Like, they didn't charge you with criminal fraud in this country. It was just
never indicted. I'll say this. When Chevron's law firm, Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, headed by Randy Mastro, former Rudy Giuliani deputy mayor, he's an odious person in my view. Okay. He's enriched himself, billed hundreds of millions of dollars into his firm to try to destroy me. And one of the things he did in 2010, just reported by the Wall Street Journal the other day, is he went down to the Southern District of New York and tried to get me criminally prosecuted for this supposed fraud in Ecuador that didn't happen. And of course, my apologies for the noise. Of course, the SDNY refused at that point to prosecute me, okay? Fast forward, this has been a 10-year Chevron plan to try to put me in prison. Fast forward to 2019 when Judge Kaplan charged me. And the SDNY again refused to prosecute me. Why do they keep refusing to prosecute me? Let me tell you something. If you're going to be charged with a crime, you know, and I hope it never happens to anybody, but if you are going to be charged with a crime, you need a jury. I mean, that's the fundamental, right? And they've charged me twice with crimes in Chevron-run prosecutions where I wasn't given a jury. The corporate takeover of this little nook of the U.S. federal judiciary is unprecedented. I think it's a playbook for the fossil fuel industry for the future. That is, if they can get away with it in my case, they're going to use it against other people. And we need to watch this, and we need to stop this.
What is the hearing on Monday? What specifically, like, what is this hearing about on Monday?
The hearing is whether I am innocent or guilty of these criminal contempt charges that Judge Kaplan, not the government, that Judge Kaplan filed against me.
But why is it taking so long? I mean, you've been in your house for 600 plus days.
Well, understand, like, a year of that was COVID, and right, there were no trials happening. Look, I never thought they'd keep me locked up. I mean, I shouldn't be locked up. Okay, that's just wrong. So I kept thinking I was going to be let out, and my lawyers couldn't even come to court. I'd lawyer in Oregon. Marty Garbus is 87 years old. He's living in the Cape during COVID. You know, people didn't want to, this is pre-vaccine. You know, people didn't want to come to court and risk their lives so Chevron and Judge Kaplan and Judge Preska could railroad me into prison. I couldn't get my lawyers to come to court. And frankly, I'm 59. I didn't want to get COVID and die in prison. Okay. So we asked for delays. Witnesses couldn't get to court. Preska was so, she had such an appetite to do the case that when there's literally no other cases going on in New York because of COVID, there's 1,000 people in jail waiting for trials, in jail, who can't get courtroom time because of COVID. She was trying to rush me into trial as a misdemeanor case via Zoom. And she said, you go into court and your lawyers can represent you by Zoom over their computers. That's how out there she is, okay, and trying to destroy me. And of course, we wouldn't do it. So it kept getting delayed. She never released me.
Okay. And so this is, and which is also just sort of bizarre. I mean, I don't know what the theory is that you would have, what, fled to?
They put forth this pretext that I'm a risk of flight, that I'm going to go to Ecuador. I have a wife. I have a 14-year-old son. I face a misdemeanor. I don't have a passport. They took that. I have an ankle brace. Like, I'm really going to go to Ecuador? I mean, I can't even get on a plane. I don't have a passport. You know, it's all just made up BS to justify keeping me imprisoned in my own home.
The hearing is on Monday, and this is to, I guess, assess these charges.
Yeah.
And where is the Department of Justice on this? Like, what point would they intervene? I mean, could they step in and say, you know what, we're going to prosecute this, or could they step in and say, hey, this is, I mean, what could the DOJ do? What are the different scenarios?
The DOJ could do a bunch of things. The most important thing they could do is just take back the prosecution from the private Chevron law firm. They have the power to do that. This is a conflict of interest. It's flagrant. It violates DOJ policy. It violates the rule of law. It violates the Constitution, in our view. They should take it back, release me, and then review the case and decide what to do. I actually think if they review the case, they'll do the same thing they did 2 years ago. They'll say, this is ridiculous. We're not prosecuting this guy. I didn't do anything wrong. And it'll go away. You know, so the Chevron plan to criminalize me, to get a criminal conviction and put me in jail, is heavily dependent on the DOJ not acting. Okay. The second thing the DOJ should do is an investigation into the corruption in the Southern District of New York among the judges. Okay. And Chevron. There is corruption. And the corruption, they're all talking. There's ex parte communications between the Chevron prosecutor and the Chevron judges. That's illegal. Judges can't talk ex parte to one party and not the other. It's happening. We've accused them of it. They haven't denied it. We've asked for an investigation. Again, the Second Circuit has done nothing based on our request for an investigation. When we asked for emails between the prosecutor and the judges, Judge Preska, who's presiding over this, you call it a hearing, it's actually a trial, in quotes. It's not really a trial because the outcome is preordained, but she refuses to give us the information. So it's a closed circle of people committed to my destruction. There's no neutral judge who will hear any of our motions. You know, for example, there's thousands of people around the world that want to listen to my trial. We've had Zoom access to every court proceeding in my case up to this point. Suddenly on the eve of trial, Judge Preska terminates all Zoom access. They are trying to have a secret tribunal closed off to the public, closed off to international trial monitors. There's a trial monitoring committee, which you almost never see in the United States of America. These are committees that usually go, they went to Nuremberg. They go to Turkey. They go to Saudi Arabia. They go to Russia. They don't do it in the U.S. because we're hopefully a good enough legal system where it's not necessary. But in my case, they're doing it, this misdemeanor case. And this Chevron law firm, by the way, has billed taxpayers over $500,000 to prosecute me. There's three lawyers. They charge $300 an hour each. The average defense lawyer to defend a misdemeanor is paid $3,400. They billed over $500,000. This is a public subsidy to Chevron to carry out its campaign to demonize the human rights lawyer who held them accountable.
And lastly, what can listeners of this program do? I mean, is it contact your congresspeople? We've seen there's already a letter there. I mean, is it contact?
There's a couple of things. We have a website which has more specific instructions. Please go to it. It's called freedonziger.org. One word, free, D-O-N-Z-I-G-E-R. And it has information about how to contact Merrick Garland. Needs to be called, needs to be emailed. Secondly is you can join our campaign. There's a button where we will get your email and we will give you regular updates. And thirdly, if you can, we have a defense fund because I cannot tell you how expensive it is to deal with these monsters. If you care to help us, please give money to the defense fund, which is held in trust in a Washington state law firm that has worked with me for years. And it's used to pay legal expenses as well as some of our household expenses, because while I've been locked up for 2 years, I haven't earned a dime and we need to eat. So the best way to combat Chevron on this situation, you know, is to help protect me in this way and go to the website. The final thing I want to say, Sam, is, you know, this is much bigger than me. You know, they are attacking me to not pay the people they poisoned in Ecuador. It's very important. These are indigenous groups. Rural communities, people I've worked with now for 27 years. I've been there 250 times back and forth as a lawyer. And Chevron has calculated that by locking me up and doing this to me, somehow they're going to not have to pay the judgment they owe to the people of Ecuador. Luckily, there are other lawyers working on this, and I don't think they're going to get away with it. But it is connected. And by protecting me, you're protecting the right of the Ecuadorians to their lawyer, the person they've chosen to help them all these years. And I just want people to not forget that this is really about the people of Ecuador. And while I'm suffering, and believe me, we are suffering, we're strong, we're hopeful, we're resilient. The Nobel laureates and all the people who backed us, you know, even the honor of being on your show and telling you the story matters a lot in terms of raising our spirits and giving us the impetus to fight on. And believe me, we will fight on.
Well, Steve Donziger, the website is freedonziger.org. We'll put a link to that in the YouTube and podcast descriptions. Good luck. We'll be following the case.
Yeah. One other thing. Follow me on Twitter if you can. I'm at S. Donziger, and it's on Twitter where I put out a bunch of very current materials about developments in the case, and we'll be tweeting next week about the trial.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, and good luck on Monday.
Appreciate it.
Garland gets the word.
Thank you.
All right. Nuts. I should say also, full disclosure, Martin Garbus, at one point I was represented by his firm. So Garbus was Lenny Bruce's lawyer.
Oh.
And he had a law firm that did a lot of free speech stuff. And I wasn't represented by him directly. I met him maybe once or twice or something like that. But my lawyer at one point in my entertainment career was at that firm. And I was excited about it because, you know,
I mean, Lenny Bruce. Yeah.
But he's a big First Amendment lawyer, Garbus. So there it is. But that story is nuts.
It's about sending a message. You know, you're going to win a multi-billion-dollar judgment against Chevron. We're gonna lock you up for pursuing this case.
So much of this, the whole vaccine patent thing. So much of this is about like setting a precedent. They don't care about Donziger. They don't care about him at all.
Yeah,
they just want it. They care about all the future people who are going to be working on cases.
The future Donzigers.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. Is like,
And U.S. The U.S. doesn't have jurisdiction to go after the indigenous people who were hurt by this, basically, who initially pursued the case. So you're going to go after the lawyer.
It really is.
It's also so much about U.S. hegemony. I mean, that really stuck with me. That judge, Lewis Kaplan, the commitment to, you're not going to have some foreign country steal from our polluting.
It's nuts.
U.S. Imperialist corporation, basically.
This in the face of the reporting by Ryan Grimm and Ken Klippenstein in The Intercept about the DOJ harassing MIT research for the Center for Economic and Policy Research. We had representatives on this show to talk about the Bolivian election. And while they were calling out the OAS lies about election fraud, which Ken and Ryan correctly point were the same ones Trump tried to run, where you declare victory early before all the votes are counted. They were harassing those researchers on behalf so they can get involved when they want to.
Yeah. And by the way, the Biden administration has completely held that same line when it comes to the Bolivian election. I mean, the fact that they in the same breath can decry Trump's efforts and then still support this OAS lie about the Bolivian elections is absurd and says everything you need to know about Blinken and Biden's approach to foreign policy. And just to mention Ken and Ryan's piece in The Intercept. Wow, what a team up, by the way. I'm interviewing Ken on that investigation into the DOJ harassing MIT researchers on the Bolivian election, as Matt said, next week, and it should be on the Peacock app shortly. So everybody tune in to some of those interviews. They're really good.
Folks, we're going to take a break ahead into the fun half of the program. You can join us there by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support the free show. We got to figure out other ways of getting that Donziger thing out. I mean, I hope people tune into the whole show today.
It's Don Zeiger.
Don Zeiger, right.
Sorry. I think I said it wrong, too.
And but you can become a member of the show, support the free half. You get the free half free of commercials at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, I'm getting little pings from the Discord. Go to majoritydiscord.com. Talk about what you've seen on the show at any given point. It's a great way, if you're watching on Twitch or you're watching on YouTube, or you are listening as a podcast, or you're watching on Facebook maybe, or Twitter, but you want to talk to other people who have watched, you know, after the show, get back into the chat situation, majoritydiscord.com. It's a great way to do it. Check it out. And we, you know, we're going to have other stuff that we're going to start try and integrate, and going to try and get some of those, free the peacock things. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. Yeah. So check that out. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. And of course, the AM quickie. And if you go on the app, majorityapp.com, you get the AM quickie, you get the majority report. You get to search the things. If you're a member, it's free. majorityapp.com. Check it out. Also, don't forget, tune in to Nomi's show today. YouTube.com/TheNomiKeyShow.
I guess it's Femme Friday, right?
Femme Friday. Don't know who it is, but always a good time on that show. Check it out. Matt Leck, what's today? Friday. Oh, so yeah. It was Thursday. What happened on Left Reckoning?
Luke Savage, staff writer Jacobin, joined us. We talked about not only Bill Gates, but also don't get too high on pharma now, folks. They're not good. They're not good. He told us this great story about penicillin during World War II, how the government said, hey, Pfizer, you know how you have that trade secret about how to make penicillin a lot more efficiently? You have to share that with everybody. And it worked extremely well. And we should be doing that now. Not only forcing, tech and knowledge transferred between the West and the rest, but also between these companies now too. Moderna might know something that Pfizer don't. We can facilitate better vaccines when we get IP out of there. So that was last night, Left Reckoning. Go subscribe on YouTube, folks.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Danarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason
why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Come on!
To pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, total, 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 pussy.